So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review way.
Simple Jericho. Oh, he went for a drop kick off the rope. And the horse's got Jericho in the walls of Jericho. And Jericho is tapping out. He's tapping like a broken man. This match should be over. This match should be over. Oh, there's no damn referee in the ring. Jericho is tapping.
Where did Nick Patrick go?
Look at this. Wait a damn way. Work here. Austin's not moving. Jericho's got a leg hook. My God, don't tell me this. My God, it can't be happening. My God almighty, Jericho has done it.
The winner of this bout is Undisputed Champion, Chris Jericho.
For the love of God, I cannot believe this.
Look at Mr. McMahon. He's laughing now. He's laughing last. He's laughing loud. He said he was going to be the last laugher, and he is.
McMahon cannot afford for Austin to win this match. And Jericho, with McMahon's help, with the help of Booker T, bottom line is, you might not like how it went down, but Y2J is the first undisputed champion.
Shame me, Mr. Redman. It's all the same to me. Look at all this useless talk. Look at all this useless talk. Look at all this useless talk upon your cross. You look at me, but you don't see.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, I'm a fucking idiot. Why don't you explain what we've done for the last 30 minutes?
We recorded... Do we?
Tell them all, because this is 1,000% my fault.
No.
It's Wei just laughs at me.
Well, first of all, we're not recording in our usual space. I don't know if people can tell. All you audiophiles out there might be able to tell the...
They noticed Monday night in the podcast how beautiful it sounded.
Okay, well, there's a bit of an...
Again,
echo.
More my... I'm really dragging this podcast
no,
down,
no,
in
no,
my
no.
opinion.
No. You're the machine. You're the engine that runs. And as we all know, engines... don't always run perfectly. Sometimes they need a bit of fixing, especially in the winter.
If me and Wei were cell phones, Wei would be the iPhone 7S, and I'd be the goddamn rotary dial phone that is not wireless.
No, but you know what? The iPhone breaks down. The rotary dial phone will always work.
But no one wants the rotary dial phone anymore.
Oh, stop, please. Don't be like that. So John and I were recording this show at his place, which is beautifully decorated.
Look at my Christmas
tree. We actually talked for a half hour.
I'm not redoing our conversation.
It's so insincere now. About Christmas, about like, it was the best.
Some beautiful stories about Wei's childhood. Maybe we'll get to it at some point this month.
As with every show that we lose... It was the best show we've ever done.
Maybe the best opening,
yeah,
for sure.
Of all time. And so we recorded it. We went into our review about a half hour in, at which point John goes on this big long spiel about the unification title ramifications. And, you know, it was just the most marvelous, beautiful thing I've ever heard.
I sang.
Yeah, he sang. He did a big dance, and it was just wild and crazy. A horse came in, and then... I look down at his laptop, and I look at the USB cable that is attached to this microphone, and I notice it's not plugged in. So I'm like, what is that? Like, my first thoughts were, has John just got another thing plugged in here? Like, has he got like some type of special mouse that he just decided to unplug? I look down, I follow the cords, I follow it all the way up into this winding circle. And then I see it connected to my microphone on the other end, and it just...
Wei starts smiling as he just picks up the cord and I'm confused.
John is still like
talking. I thought he was trying to make some joke about something he said, like, look at this cord. I had no idea. And then Wei has to explain it to me. The cord's not plugged in. And I nearly cried.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been doing this for, what, like 5 years now?
I feel we set ourselves up for this because just the other week we were talking about how, you know, if Unforgiven 99 happened to us now, I don't know if we could redo it again. And I think that life was challenging our passion today to see, okay, let's put them to the test here. We're going to give you a fuck up here.
Yeah, well, honestly, I mean, we should have followed my own advice. We should have always double rolled. But, I mean, unfortunately, with the setup we have, we can't.
We can't double roll.
But, you know, I'm also at the point now where when this stuff happens, whatever, who cares? Like, we're just talking here. It's not like we're, you know... Like, we're not doing anything that spectacular. We're just, like, having a conversation that we would have.
I'd be more mad if we had done the review.
Yeah, me too. Because that is sometimes it's actually work, and it's just hard to redo. But this, it's just like, what's the big deal? And, you know, anytime you lose something due to a computer error or human error, you lose, like, a long document that you've written, or you lose a video that you've been editing for a long time, the best thing to do is to just go right back at it and redo it as soon as you can. While it's still fresh in your brain, everything that you've done, just tackle it, do it as quick as you can.
Has that happened to you lately of editing something and it crashes?
Yeah,
it happens
all the time.
I couldn't... Something like that takes hours and you have to redo the exact same thing?
Yeah. Well, a good habit to have is, you know, to make great use of your autosave feature, or if not, just make a habit of using the Control S shortcut every single time you've done something. But I mean, just even as recently as editing that video for your wedding, you shouldn't feel bad or anything about this, but like my computer, for whatever reason, it just like it tends to crash whenever there's a lot of like effects heavy things, and so. Often I would lose 10-minute chunks of work because I would forget to edit. But again, like, not a big deal.
Maybe that's why you're so calm. You have to deal with stuff like this, and your mind has just acclimated to disappointment.
I do get disappointed, yeah, for sure. But I also realize that, you know, getting upset over it isn't going to bring it back. It's only going to delay the process.
I hit rock bottom when we lost that the Jim Crockett documentary.
That was pretty bad.
Because that was the week before I was leaving for Russia.
Yeah.
I was so angry.
We were in like a real bind, and also like I thought it was a good review.
It was a very good review.
Plus it was just like, I mean, an hour and a half of our time, and that's a lot harder to replicate than, you know, 30 minutes of banter or even 10 minutes of editing work. So that I understand for sure.
So much like Bret Hart told us in his home about the finish for the Yokozuna match, or a sequence that he had planned that got rushed and eliminated. He said, if I couldn't use it in that match, I wasn't going to use it ever again, and it's been lost forever. And much like our opening banter, where we talked about mall deaths and Wei's Christmas as a child, the year he kept a Christmas tree until April, causing a fire hazard in Scarborough, gone.
Yeah, we did talk about all that.
Maybe over the next month, over the course of our 8,000 podcasts, we'll sprinkle in some of those stories.
We will do that.
And we'll make a checklist of the stories, and people can keep track.
I will force my brain to suffer from amnesia of the past 30 minutes. Therefore, I will forget everything, and it'll seem completely new.
That seems like a completely noble idea.
Let me just do that. Let me devoid myself of oxygen for a bit.
You should just do some Muay Thai classes.
Yeah, just get knocked out.
You'll get. Hey, I'm gonna ask you. Doing jiu-jitsu as much as you have you gotten your bell rung? Have you experienced that feeling yet?
No, not yet. Thankfully.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
it happened to me twice in one class.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
There was
one where it was like, I knocked my chin into something, and it literally sounded like
a bell,
like an easy bake oven was like, you know, where it hits, the time is up, and you ding, and that's where I was like, that's what it means to get my bell rung.
Was it like
it was a literal bell ringing?
Wait, was it like a constant, like sustained ringing?
Or no, it was instant and over with. But it was like
maybe there was an actual bell.
It like shot up my jawline, and in my head, just like. Dinged.
Really?
And this happened twice in one class.
I've never had that, but that sounds very scary. Like, you actually hear a ding.
That's what I heard. Like that's what it totally sounded like. Not animated, but like,
I don't even know if that's possible.
Because,
I mean, I would understand hearing like a sustained
noise. You go and you ask some of your teammates if they've ever had their bell rung and ask the description. And I have to imagine that it's similar to this.
I thought it would just simply be like, you know, like a daze. Like the vibration of a bell, except it's your brain.
No. I've never seen stars from anything. I've heard people literally say they've seen stars.
I have seen stars just like, but just through the stupidest things. Like, I could do cartwheels and I could see stars. You know what I mean? Like, just, I don't know.
You're maybe rattling your brain.
Yeah, yeah. Cartwheels are dangerous.
I have a feeling that everybody has probably had at least a concussion in their life without having any clue about it.
Everybody? I don't know about everybody.
Not everybody, but I think more than you would think.
Yeah, sure.
I think the idea that you have to be in some heavy contact sport to ever experience a concussion is crazy.
You can get it from a number of things. I mean, obviously, you know.
I'm positive I got one. When I was a kid, I definitely blacked out once from hitting my head on the floor.
Right.
I'm sure that was not great.
That happens, yeah. But, I mean, you're okay now. You're not suffering from any post-traumatic.
Who knows? I might have CTE.
You seem to be functioning fine.
I hope so.
I bet you're okay. Well, the rule is don't do anything. Don't do anything physical. Just stay on your couch. Stay at your desk. Don't
keep looking at this cord.
Yeah.
Just making sure it's plugged in.
But no, I haven't really suffered anything like that. So,
would you ever consider donating your brain after you've died?
For examination. For what reason? Why would anybody want to examine my brain?
Oh, maybe you're going to be more... Not more athletic, but maybe you'll get into other contact sports, and then
I doubt that.
You'll want other people to maybe learn from it.
Maybe I'll somehow, become a football player.
Are you an organ donor?
I'm not.
A morbid discussion.
I don't even know where people sign up for that stuff.
I think I did it at my bank.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've donated everything. What do I need stuff for?
Well, no.
It's more a religious thing, I think. Yeah. You want to arrive complete wherever you're going.
Or just more of like a... ew, icky type of thing.
What do you mean, ew?
Some people might just simply want to be buried with everything that they have, all their organs inside.
I would feel if my organs are fine, it could help somebody else.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of a unselfish way to go.
Would you let them take your eyeballs?
Oh, listen, it's all up on the auction block.
Would you let them take your head?
I don't think someone can take my head. I don't think that's very functional.
How about your face? Like face.
How creepy would that be if you could like pass on your entire facial structure?
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like you're around, but you're a different body and person.
Listen, if I could take like Brad Pitt's face.
This is eclipsing the human drone.
This
chat.
Is definitely a way better banter than what we lost. So don't feel so bad.
We've upped ourselves.
Yeah. If I could take Brad Pitt's face after he dies. Done. Give that to me.
There'd be a big auction for that.
Yeah. Take Brad Pitt's face.
Yeah, it could go to, for...
with a body of...
A world of better facial features .org. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay, you're an organ donor. Would you let somebody take your face so that, I mean, the only reason why anybody would care what they look like after they're dead is just really for the ceremony, right? When you're in that casket,
I do not want to be part of an open casket funeral.
Oh, you don't want to?
That's weird.
It is kind of weird, but I mean, a lot of people do it, but that's the only reason that I could think of. So you would let people take your face and head.
It's weird. I'm fine with donating anything, but getting cremated to me, that's just, I don't know.
That's weird too. How do you intend to go? You just want to be in a closed casket?
I'm not opposed to the idea, just being buried, and it's good.
Okay.
But being like,
How do we even know you're in there?
How do you know these ashes are you?
That's true. Chances are they might not be.
Yeah.
Because they I don't know how well they clean those things.
Yeah.
Might be like horses, ash.
This is really depressing. Let's not talk about death.
Whatever.
Let's talk about life.
All right.
The WWF was trying to find new life after the invasion.
Oh, God.
After they hit a near death with that storyline. Vengeance.
Great.
Was Sunday, yeah, December.
Maybe like a 4 out of 10. Not even 3 out of 10.
Sunday, was the worst segue of the year, though, still reserved for the next time the WWF would return to Kemper Arena would be for the launch of SmackDown.
That was pretty bad.
That was the worst segue of the year, in my
that's
opinion.
That's very awkward. Yeah.
Let's chat Vengeance, December the 9th, 2001, presented by Lugs. Remember Lugs?
I do remember.
Think they're still around?
Yeah.
Lugs with a Z.
Lugs. FUBU was big.
FUBU.
I don't think FUBU's around anymore.
Nope.
They will probably come back though at some point.
They probably will. Some retro, or it'll be the new FUBU, where it's a completely different style and marketing idea. It's like,
yeah,
like three-piece suits.
FUBU suits? No, I don't know.
FUBU Sue.
Stop. All right, let's redo this one.
Okay.
I think let's pull the
let's pull the plug. Yeah. That has a literal meaning. Vengeance. I feel stupid. It's like this is the part where we almost got cut off, so I'm repeating myself here. But
it's okay.
Vengeance, prior to this, was marketed as Armageddon. But following 9/11 following 9/11 way, they thought Armageddon might be insensitive, so they changed it to Vengeance.
Yes, they did.
Which do you find has more of a connotation to tragedy?
They definitely both can relate to 9/11, but I mean, certainly the word vengeance is more of a rallying cry than, you know, like a victimizing cry.
Yes.
Not like, to say Armageddon, not to say anybody. Well, yeah, you can cry Armageddon, but to cry vengeance in the streets, much more uplifting than, you know, oh shit, Armageddon, we can't do anything. Vengeance, we can do something. We can get revenge.
I guess kind of, you know, following 9/11, we had Unforgiven, No Mercy, and Vengeance. All kind of rallying cries.
Yeah. Yeah. Operation No Mercy.
Operation No Mercy.
Operation Survivor Series.
Survivor Series.
Doesn't really
work. Might have heard us, but we have survived.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Royal Rumble. Rumble. That's isn't that bad?
Too? I don't know.
That's not bad?
I think... The original four pay-per-views, I think they were designed to be very inoffensive.
What's with all the what's with all the aggressive names? Why don't we just have what happened to WrestleFest and, you know, Saturday night's main event?
Well, you're trying to sell conflict here.
Come on. Like it's athletic competition.
It's not a four-way. It's a fatal four-way.
Yeah, somebody's going to die. Camp Takedown. Pinfall Palooza.
It's not about winning, it's about having fun. Participation Fest.
Speaking of which,
we're all winners.
Speaking of which, have you heard of it? I don't know if you're familiar with the thing called Participaction.
Oh, I'm very familiar as a Canadian.
As a Canadian, Participaction, which I believe still exists, is, I don't know if it's a government-sponsored athletic program, but, I mean, the reason why anybody would have heard of Participaction, as John checks on the recording, is due to...
Hal Johnson and Joanne McLeod.
Stars of Body Break, which are these infomercial type of things that would always come on TV, and they'd be the cheesiest, weird... they're so campy and so cheesy. It's just like, they're these two, like, guys... A guy and a girl in a bike helmet riding their bikes, stopping in front of the camera.
A two-seater, one bike.
Yeah, with a big smile on their face. Riding a bike can be a great exercise over the summer. Here's how you can keep warm. Or I don't know, not during the summer, whatever, some bullshit like that. My whole thing is, over the past weekend, a listener of ours... Actually, we've gotten a lot of these tweets from listeners saying how they listen to our shows as they do their cardio, as they do their exercises.
Sure.
So, you know, just as motivation, or not as motivation, but to turn their brains off, maybe for motivation.
Yeah, it's actually the opposite.
You see how hard we're working here, sitting here.
These lazy fucks.
Yeah, and so I responded, yeah, maybe we should send a thing of fitness. We should do fitness DVDs. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if Hal Johnson is just on Twitter all the time typing fitness and seeing who's talking about fitness. But shortly after that, I was recently followed on my Twitter account by Body Break.
Wow.
Yeah. This is Hal Johnson and Joanne McLeod following me.
That's incredible.
That definitely was a career highlight.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if he's simply looking up fitness.
Is that the coolest person that follows you?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Do you have anyone that's following you that you were like, holy shit?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I was really excited when Britney Spears started following us. And then I looked on her thing. She just follows everybody. I don't know how she came in contact with us or found our show on Twitter.
She
it follows like 21,000 people. It's not really an exclusive club.
It just might be one of those fake things where like they do all that. But I'd be very disappointed if this body break was a fake. Maybe
I don't know if there's too many fake body break accounts out
there. Well, I mean, I'm looking at their account right now. They follow 23,000 people, so I can't think that it's too personal. Or maybe they are big wrestling podcast fans.
They could be. Doubtful. It's a good workout.
Yeah.
Great cardio.
Anyway.
Well, that's great.
Enough of that.
Let's get back to Vengeance. Way, you noted something about the advertising of this show.
Yes.
Because it was very controversial at the time. There were some upset people who bought this pay-per-view and didn't get what was advertised.
You read my mind, because I was just going to ask you. Triple H was all over the original advertising of this show. It was Triple H on the poster. There's the sledgehammer graphics throughout the show. What was the deal with that?
Well, at the time, of course, Triple H, he had torn his quad in May. And these pay-per-view posters and the advertising, I mean, it goes out months in advance. So they were kind of throwing a dart here, hoping that Hunter would be back in time for this pay-per-view. But the idea at the time, as the show got closer, was that Hunter, they wanted to save his first match for the Royal Rumble. They kind of figured out, you know, it's best to do the first match back on pay-per-view, and bringing him back December the 9th for a pay-per-view that wasn't until January 20th. Pretty hard to book him on Raw and SmackDown every week and not put him in the ring. On top of that, it was kind of a smart strategic play on the part of Triple H, because he came back on the first Monday of the year after Monday Night Football was gone, and you were going to get that artificial bump anyway. And it was a real big comeback at Madison Square Garden. I don't know if it really would have fit on this pay-per-view, other than, you know, people might have paid to see this return. But nonetheless, and the funny part was he ended up wrestling like a tag match right before the Royal Rumble anyway. You had like a week and a half before the Rumble, and they still put him in the ring.
Yeah.
But that Rumble did a massive number because of Triple H. So you can't really fault the idea, but it was very similar to the Survivor Series 2007 show we did, where Edge was off TV, but all the poster and the advertising was all built around Edge, and he did show up as a surprise at the end of the pay-per-view. So this was clearly the advertising was out, and a lot of people figured Hunter was coming back, but did not.
Yeah, and I think they've since pretty much, I mean, aside from 2007, I guess, but I can't recall an instance where they continued to do that. Today, like, it feels like they try to keep their advertising pretty generic.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, some people saw, was it the Survivor Series poster maybe, or it was another pay-per-view.
I never understand why they have to do it so early, because the UFC does them, you know, relatively early too, but they always, at least, well, I guess you're dealing with different, because like in wrestling, they really just book month to month, whereas the UFC are able to book something maybe like 3 months.
That's it, right? Like they just announced Rashad Evans and Daniel Cormier, so that's going to go out, that's not till March.
Right,
so, you know,
right,
you have a couple months to build around that. You do have a bit of more notice of where you're going if you're a UFC main card, whereas WWE, it's, I don't think people take too much stock in posters. Like, it used to be, oh, the No Way Out poster is out and it's got Punk on the front. That must mean this. And it's like people quickly realize, it's like, the guys, they don't know what they're doing in 2 weeks, much less 4 months from now.
Yeah.
So anyway, Vengeance took place from San Diego, California, December of 2001. Your first time watching this show, Wei?
I don't remember. I mean, I was watching the product at the time. Maybe not all the pay-per-views, but I think I saw some of these matches, like some of them, but not the whole show.
This was that weird time in between the Invasion and the brand split, where we had kind of this weird period where it was just, this was such a complicated time, because if you had just watched Survivor Series, which we have reviewed in the past, my God, the amount of heel and babyface turns from that show to this pay-per-view in between that time. One of the craziest in history when it comes to all these characters that flipped. We actually saw Kurt Angle go into Survivor Series as a heel, turn babyface by the end of the match to save the WWF, turn heel the next night in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Undertaker turned heel after that show. Vince McMahon was like a pseudo heel going into the Survivor Series, was captaining the babyface team, but then back to a heel here against Ric Flair. Austin was the heel at Survivor Series that then was babyfaced by the next night.
Yeah.
All these turns all over the place. They were just randomly bringing back all the WCW guys, so there was really no consequence to the losses of that match. Everyone was brought back. it was just a really muddled time period when it comes to keeping these characters straight and where their heel or babyface personas were.
Yeah, it just seemed like a very sloppily done thing. And
I look at this time period as what really did in Kurt Angle, where it was just all these turns that it was just, I think there was a certain indifference to this guy after all these turns.
For sure. I mean, he was still having a great year in terms of in-ring stuff. But yeah, same with Austin. I think it really hurt him too.
I don't think Austin was ever quite the same after this period where he was...
Well, it's the heel turn itself.
That really and hurt him. It was right before the invasion that they did that that turn on the Raw going into the invasion where they teased that Austin was back.
Yeah.
And that show did a huge number, and I think a small part of that was Austin back as a babyface that people wanted, and then they flipped him back heel at the Invasion show. And it was ever since that point, it was like he never, to me, really got back to that top babyface status afterwards.
Right. In hindsight, I mean, the whole Invasion, we've talked about it a long time before, but it just seemed like something that was kind of jammed into their plans that they didn't really intend on doing anything with. And so it came... And the moment that it left, they wanted to go back to where they, you know, wanted to the status quo, you know, as you could say. And I thought this show kind of reflected that. You had Austin as a babyface, Angle as a heel, Rock as a babyface, Jericho as a heel. Seems to be what these guys are best
at. Yeah, Jericho was another one that turned at this point. He was kind of teasing it going in the Survivor Series and then made the full turn afterwards. The show started off with this video that they had done in the past. It was... with Freddie Fellini playing off of filmmaker. But it was basically entitled One, and it went through all these past stars with the company, which was very different for the WWF at the time. They had really kind of shut the door on their past, but here was a pay-per-view built around history, and you got to see Koloff, Sammartino, superstar Billy Graham, Antonina Rocca, just kind of a plethora, and NWA counterparts as well. It was really, this pay-per-view, it was so weird for the company at the time because they never really acknowledged this past.
Yeah, and I really liked the video. I thought it was, I mean, anytime you're trying to sell the ramifications of something like an Undisputed Championship, the value of something like that is the fact that it's unifying these two long, great lineages that have existed for such a long time. And I don't think that's something that they did enough back then. It's not something that they did enough now going into this next pay-per-view that the WWE has. Not something that they've done really at all until this little video, which I thought was really good. What do you think of, like, you know, you say they've done this before. Like, what do you think of the decision to use somebody like Freddie Blassie as sort of like that figure that... that represents the history of the company.
I always loved when they would use him. They didn't use him too much, but when he would do, you know, some voiceovers or just an opening of a pay-per-view, I remember they used him for the start of WrestleMania 15, and it was one of my favorite openings where, you know, he would just have this monologue, and it was just, you know, he's this respected figure. He was a manager that a lot of people really enjoyed. He had that gravelly voice. Mm-hmm. I loved when they would use Freddie Blassie.
Yeah.
And I thought he was a nice tie in here. Still had strong ties with the company. The modern audience was familiar with who the guy was.
Yeah.
And he was a tie to the past. So I always enjoyed when they used him for these kind of sparing videos.
He's just a great, wise old guy.
Sure.
In, you know, seated.
Yes. They even used him in the Invasion. They did like the Pearl Harbor scene where they wheeled him in, and then he was, you know, giving the big speech to the WWF.
Yeah.
I think they had Stephanie and Shane tell him he's going to die.
Yes. Who would they use these days?
Who?
In that role.
I mean, it's really hard to put someone in that Blassie role. I mean, kind of their kind of elder statesman figure now has kind of become Bruno. Yeah, I would say. Though he's not really, I don't think you're going to see him doing too many pep talks or.
Yeah, if anything, it'd be a guy like Brett maybe. Who's kind of in that role now, that kind of old man who doesn't really do much but, you know, be there for moral support.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, they certainly have a way bigger reflection on their history today versus 2001. And that's
smart.
You brought up in a version one of this podcast. Yeah. You know, the fact was in 2001, they got that WCW tape library. And this was when they began kind of being aggressive, going after tape libraries. And it made sense for them on a financial level to market this history. And, you know, we're kind of see the culmination of that with this network.
And again, it's something I wish that they would do more often, tie in their history to their current storylines as a way, you know, not only to drive up the importance of their current storylines, but to also promote this backlog of great video that they have that they intend to make money off of.
Now, this Vengeance pay-per-view, much like TLC, the unification announcement, it really just kind of came out of nowhere. Both of them got like 3-week builds. And do you think that it hurt at all doing this on such a kind of a throwaway December pay-per-view as opposed to something of more significance? Like, it's a significant match, but I don't feel, I mean, this pay-per-view, it wasn't like it was a giant home run for them, nor is TLC going to be a big purchase pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. It's theoretically should be an important match. Is that more reflective of just the titles weren't that over to where people really cared about a unification?
I think perhaps it was that. Perhaps, personally, I feel like, you know, they're probably kind of trapped in a corner where, you know, in between Survivor Series, you had the end of the invasion. And then next, you had the Rumble, which, you know, this whole thing would be overshadowed by the Rumble. And then you had, what did they have as a February?
It was No Way Out at the time. And that was that year they brought the NWO back. That was the big...
Yes, that's right.
The big part of that show.
And then you had Mania, and I know that they wanted to do this before Mania, and so, you know, that really just leaves your December slot with a chance to really focus on something like this. In hindsight, this is probably all they had, but obviously anything could have been better if it had more build.
The announcers for the show were Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. This was Jerry Lawler's first pay-per-view back since he had left in February of that year when he left with Stacy Carter and then came back the night after the Survivor Series and replaced Paul Heyman. And Vince McMahon comes out to start the show. This was like a Raw segment to start the pay-per-view because they were coming off a SmackDown angle. They had introduced the Kiss My Ass Club the night after Survivor Series. And, of course, William Regal was forced to kiss Vince's ass. Then we had the infamous angle with Jim Ross, which I don't know about you, Wei. I have never in my life forgotten about the Jim Ross kiss my ass part. I had no clue that that was the Undertaker heel turn as well.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't remember the Undertaker being part of this at all. Yeah. And he was the one that led to this, telling Jim Ross, "Are you better than me? Because I'm the biggest ass kisser here." Something I never equated the Undertaker being a part of. Arguing about what a big ass kisser he is.
Yeah.
A very awkward heel turn. One of many that came out of that Survivor Series.
No, I definitely remember seeing Undertaker shove JR's face in Vince's ass.
Oh, a wonderful moment. That was one of those legendary segments where my mom walked in as I had this on TV and asked me, "What are you watching?"
Yeah.
Though I'd have an even better moment later on in this very pay-per-view.
Oh, boy.
With my dad.
Okay.
That is still to come. But anyway, the SmackDown going into Vengeance featured The Rock forcing Vince to kiss his ass, but then brought out a slew of different performers, and it all led up to Vince being shoved face first into Rikishi's ass.
Yes.
And then it happened.
Oh.
Then The Rock took advantage of me.
You know what they say? It happens.
Rock shoved my face into Rikishi's ass.
No!
Deep into the ass.
Hey, hey.
Deep undercut.
So, fine programming.
Hey, listen. I mean, it's not something that you might necessarily look back on, you know, like Steamboat and Savage, but it's like fun. It's kind of fun TV. You know, it's a spectacle. You get to see somebody's face shoved into another man's anus.
Yep.
Pretty fun.
Yeah, pretty fun. I wonder if this will be on Stephanie McMahon's PowerPoint presentation as she's trying to grow the mother and kids audience. This and Titus vomiting on Michael Cole.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. But I mean, listen, that's not that offensive. Like,
I'm not offended by this. I just I don't care to brag about watching this shit.
It is really stupid, but I do think there's a place for this type of gross humor once in a while.
Ric Flair then interrupts Vince, who came out here. He was just cutting a promo on everybody. And basically just stops Vince's promo cold and says, the pay-per-view is starting now. And this was when Flair had come in and they were basically co-owners of the WWF, which would eventually be the seeds for the brand split. And this was a kind of just reminding us of this kiss my ass angle, which would be a theme throughout the show.
Yeah, it reminded me really of the... More so, again, the invasion, where, you know, throughout the invasion, they were really hurting for that central character as a leader of the invasion. And then all of a sudden, it ends, and the day after, you had Ric Flair. In hindsight, probably a smart move, because I don't know if you wanted to ruin Ric Flair with the whole invasion, through the way it turned out. But it was just interesting how, you know, all these guys that they weren't paying to come into the invasion...
Eventually would come right in. After the invasion.
Yeah, but the story, I was never happy with the way how they explained Ric Flair, his involvement coming in and saying how
was the consortium that purchased Shane and Stephanie's stock.
Yeah, but and also by the way, the first time, the only reason I know what that word even means, consortium. They would just
the consortium. Was me.
Yeah, they just that was like the buzzword of that would have
and that infamous image of Vince McMahon grabbing his ear at the sign of Ric Flair's announcement.
But what doesn't make sense to me was like how much do you think Ric Flair in storyline would have paid for Stephanie and Shane's shares of the WWE?
Well, what did Shane and Stephanie essentially put up the night before in that winner take all match? They had sold their stock already. Is that what we were led to believe?
No, they put up WCW and ECW.
So they retained their stock in the WWF.
No, they lost that. They lost everything. No.
Then what did Ric Flair buy?
WWF. From Shane and Steph.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. So this was very confusing.
Okay. Shane and Steph sold their shares of the WWF so that they can afford ECW and WCW respectively.
I see.
But my whole thing is, why didn't Flair just buy WCW back then if he had this money?
Well, he didn't want. He always said he was so happy when WCW died. He didn't want it to continue.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess it does make better business sense from Ric Flair's perspective to buy WWF, a much more profitable company than WCW.
I kind of just wish if everything had played out that they didn't rush to the invasion, and you know you already could have brought in some guys, had some fun matches and stuff, and then come. Late 2002, when all these Turner guaranteed deals came up.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, but by that point, you know, these guys would have already gained so much traction. Would it have been smart to turn some of these guys by then?
Remember when they did the physical turn with ECW?
That was
great,
yeah.
It's like you could have had the big names come in, and then the geeks, the undercard guys, suddenly they do that similar angle to form WCW. I think it could have been...
And then what would you have done with, like, the big names? Would they have turned as well?
They would have been brought in at this time.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You could have even spaced it out. It's like Bischoff comes in with Hogan, and then it leads to Goldberg the next...
Right, you would have introduced, like, you know, sort of the Billy Kidmans and all those guys.
Bring those guys in 2001.
As regular WWF talent.
Exactly.
And then, you know, say sometime in March... Turn all those guys heel.
When you have the heavyweights, that's when you start the angle.
Perhaps, yeah, but I mean...
Let's be honest, Kidman and DDP...
Yeah, but I will say, I feel like for those ECW guys that did turn during the invasion, I think it kind of hurt some of those guys too, in particular guys like Rhino, who were gaining, you know, pretty good reactions as baby faces. When they turned heel, it was just, they're just another person.
He certainly got forgotten, and then he also missed a year because he broke his neck in 2001, so he just had a lot of bad timing. But you're right, a lot of those guys just became like Stevie Ray in the New World Order. They were just faces in the background of a very bloated alliance.
Yeah, we could talk about this invasion and
we've reviewed most of the key events in invasion history. Yeah. But anyway,
maybe they'll do it now. Oh shit! All this time, like you have who's still remaining in WCW? That was there.
Oh, that's Charles Robinson.
Charles Robinson.
He could lead.
He could,
with
Booker T will be the
Booker T
GM.
Yep. And John Laurinaitis.
Yeah.
And Arn Anderson. Boom.
There's your invasion. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. Dean Malenko probably can't work anymore.
Kidman's there.
Kidman. You know, the funniest part is the lasting WCW guy. It's all been guys behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Fit Finley.
Yeah.
All those guys, they've done fine. Bill DeMott.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there.
Norman Smiley.
Norman Smiley. Essential. Yeah, these guys, there's a place for them.
There you go.
The show starts off. We kick it off with a bonus match, Way. You buy the pay-per-view, you had no idea you were going to get this. Scotty Too Hotty and Albert, pre-hip-hop hippo. Or was this?
This was when he was the hip-hop hippo.
Okay.
Pre-Sweet Tea.
Against Test and Christian.
Yeah.
Christian was part of the alliance, right?
Yes, they both were.
Okay, so Test won the immunity battle royal, and right. Christian had a title. They explained that those who had titles got to stay.
And conveniently, members had titles.
What fuck did the Dudleys give in that winner-take-all match? They had the tag titles.
Well, I imagine they wanted to...
And I don't think they announced till the next night that anyone who has titles keeps their job.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you still want your company to be the winner, right? You still want your brand to be the winner.
Yeah, but they didn't seem to be too shaken.
It was all too convenient, and that's, you know, part of the problem with this whole invasion and how they wrapped it up was it was just kind of far-fetched and how convenient.
Like, I don't think anyone in the alliance left. They all stayed.
Of course, yeah.
The arena was very foggy early on for the pyro. We got to see Albert tag in with Test. The long-awaited battle of T versus A.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
I suppose so.
Legendary tag team.
Yeah.
Lawler went over the different names that Scotty Too Hotty and Albert could use together. We got Run BMW.
Run BMW.
The Pasty Boys.
What is that? Run BMW. Why?
I don't know. These were Lawler's names.
He's as big of as a car?
I guess. And the most offensive that made my head shake, MC Crackers.
Wow.
Disgusting.
Sorry, you have to hear that.
They got the heat on Scotty. Albert came in, and what did he hit Christian with? The giant swing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should have kept this in his repertoire. Now he's taking it.
Yeah. Well, he did. He never used it though, like Cesaro has. No. Like it's not like
it was like
10 rotations.
It's about 5 seconds he lifted him. Test then pulled Albert to the floor before Albert could hit a Baldo bomb. Christian goes to hit the worm, but gets stopped, and it leads to Scotty hitting the worm. Crowd was incredibly hot for that move.
Yep.
And Albert gets shoved into a big boot by Test for a near fall. Then there's a Baldo bomb to Christian after he attempts the unprettier to Scotty, and then Albert pins Christian. 6 minutes and 20 seconds. Very average opener, and crowd was into it.
It was average, yep, hot crowd, and, you know, the worm, the exchange of worms, kind of fun. I actually did not remember this incarnation of Albert at all.
This was before he became the A-Train.
It just basically, like... Whatever happens to this guy, if he doesn't get over, we'll make him dance.
Do you remember what he was doing right before this?
Was he not an X-Factor?
Yo, you dealing with the X-Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate the X-Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And?
Just listen to the theme music right now.
Oh, fuck. Oh, God.
Jonathan Coachman is with William Regal in the back, and Coachman questions Regal's methods in order to get this Intercontinental title shot. Regal says he is disgusted by Edge. He says he's never faced anyone like Regal, and he's been fighting for a living since he was 15, but he puts over Edge as a great athlete, but he's incurred the wrath of Regal and calls Coachman a silly pillock.
So were you offended by that?
Silly Pillock?
Pillock, yeah.
Oh, it sounds like Pollock, I guess. Oh, that's why. No, this would be great.
John Pillock?
That'd be fine with that.
What does that even mean?
Let's find out.
All right.
That's why we have the internet in this day and age.
Our
I don't even know how you spell Pillock.
P-I-L-L-I-C-K, I imagine.
P-I-L-L-O-C-K.
Oh,
man,
Pillock.
It's really close to my name.
Pillock.
Urban Dictionary or the Real Dictionary?
Urban Dictionary, of course.
Noun for idiot or fool. Originally a slang term for the penis,
but fairly inoffensive now, and its meaning has been forgotten. Example, you silly pillock, why did you do that for?
You heard that one before. Like, that's
other almost... definition. No, I've never heard this. A man who has dropped a major bollock, not necessarily a stupid bloke, rather one who has done a stupid act.
You have to be. You've got to be so thankful that you weren't born in England. Because
I'd be absolutely
John
destroyed.
John Bollock. John Pillock.
Silly Pillock.
Yeah.
So this was kind of it's what the WWE does. They thoroughly embarrass someone, and then they try to give them a little bit of a push afterwards, which Regal had to literally kiss Vince's ass, and then he was going to get a little push here.
It's just a bit of an initiation.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Initiation. Been with the company like over a year by this point.
You can always be humbled.
Well, the guy's lasted about as long as some of the most tenured veterans in the company. He's been there since 2000.
Yeah.
Edge versus William Regal for the Intercontinental title. Edge defending the title. As we mentioned, Regal was coming off the kiss my ass angle, and now he was given the brass knucks as his foreign object that he'd use in matches. And they had a pretty decent match here. Edge hit a missile drop kick off the second rope. Edge got sent into the post on the floor as the crowd is chanting, Regal sucks. Edge starts fighting back. He hits a top rope Hurricane Rana for a two count, a Northern Light suplex. Edge worked like a really risky style for a guy that size. Yep. And he was also really skinny at this point. It was like he was taking a lot of big bumps here at this point.
I wouldn't say he was skinny, okay? You and I are skinny.
I guess so.
He was
by WWE standards.
He was an athletically built guy, but yes, he wasn't
a bodybuilder.
No, he wasn't. He was not not even to the extent of a Kurt Angle or Triple H.
Oh, dude, Kurt Angle on this show
was like a
little fucking smart car in girth.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, this was during Edge's singles push, and I imagine, you know, really wanted to get noticed, really wanted to get attention.
This was right after the Christian breakup as well.
And he was having some good matches. He was, like, working hard. Regal, I've always been kind of surprised that they would give him as many chances as they had, simply because his style is so different than what I feel like they want in the company. It's a style, you know, that takes a lot of getting used to, you know, to be honest with you. It's really great. I mean, that's
why I always enjoyed it because it was a nice, like, a different style than most.
Yeah.
And man, it was so funny to watch when he came into the company. He introduced that where he'd pin them and put the forearm right in the guy's face, and quickly you'd see all these heels doing it right after him, and then Finley did it as well.
Yeah, it's so good, and like I really feel like it takes, you know, a bit more of an experienced fan to be able to appreciate all the nuances. And there's a reason why guys like, you know, Bryan Danielson will always talk about, you know, being mentored or just looking up to William Regal so much. I wish that he had a bit more of a chance to showcase the style and be given those, you know, main event type of roles to be able to have those really classic matches.
Edge runs into the steps on the floor, missing a spear. And then as the referee is tending to Edge, Regal grabs the knucks from under the ring. And Edge gets into the ring. He gets his leg on the rope for a two count. Then Regal hits a double underhook suplex to Edge, gets a two count, then hits a second one, then a third one, and Regal can't get the pinfall here. He's getting all pissed off. He's stomping Edge, and then Regal grabs the knucks from his trunks, turns around as Edge spears him, and Edge gets the win, 9 minutes and 8 seconds. And this would be the start of 3 straight pay-per-views these two would work against each other, going to the Rumble and then the No Way Out show. So they had a pretty, by those standards of the time, pretty lengthy feud.
Yeah, which I don't remember at all.
There was a, this is where I noted the graphics here with the sledgehammer. So it was very Triple H based here on this Vengeance show. Ric Flair, one of the great performers of all time. Mm-hmm. These backstage vignettes with him throughout this night, horrendous.
They weren't very special.
He is on this cell phone all fucking night long, just talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. And he's on the phone chatting about how tonight there's going to be one undisputed champion. This was like Ric Flair devoid of personality. It was just like boring babyface Ric Flair.
It was serious Ric Flair.
It was
Ric Flair as, you know, not the goofy THQ panel crazy old man Ric Flair.
He also looked about 40 years younger in 2001.
I actually didn't mind this Ric Flair. It's nowhere near as entertaining, but I thought for this role as the co-owner of the WWE as a babyface, it was the right type of Flair.
It was like Vince McMahon was Dana White and Ric Flair, brace for it, was Tom Wright.
Sure.
Like, I imagine this is how Tom Wright talks on the phone.
I don't even know how many people are listening to us are familiar with Tom Wright. Tom Wright is the Canadian, basically the Canadian Dana White. He's in charge of the Canadian division.
In that role.
As the Australia division. And, you know, in contrast to Dana White, who's a very loud guy, almost like somebody who's definitely not afraid to speak his mind, cusses a lot. Tom Wright is usually... Dana would cuss a lot. Tom Wright would come in and kind of, you know, what Dana actually means is he's very happy to be here. Like, just super PR kind of.
Yeah. Tom Wright and Lorenzo Fertitta, they're like the good cop.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, he's on the phone. Kurt Angle walks in, and he was just doing his goofy comedy delivery, which we've talked about so many times. He was really great in that role. But to me, once he hit that summer of 2001 where he got the push as the big baby face, I felt this was such a step back for him into this goofy character. And he talks about how Flair never won a gold medal. He was never undisputed champion. Angle's going to do it tonight.
Oh, I got a good shot. I have Stone Cold Steve Austin first. And when I kick his butt, I'm going to sit back and watch Rock and Jericho kick the crap out of each other. And then when I see a winner, I'm going to go down and kick the crap out of him and become the undisputed world champion.
If you can do all that, you'll be awesome.
I'm going to.
I believe you.
I'll do it.
That's awesome.
I'm going to go out there and do it.
That's awesome.
I'm going to.
That's awesome.
I will.
And Ric Flair just kept saying, you're right. You're right. That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome.
And to convey that, Kurt is this like really annoying guy who wouldn't shut up even though, you know, this guy he's talking to is not even paying attention.
I hated this.
The problem was, in hindsight, I don't even, like, at the time, I don't know if they knew that Kurt was capable of not pulling off a serious tough guy. Maybe they didn't have that confidence in him at the time. I mean, Kurt got over from his beginning to this point as sort of that comedy guy. And, you know, that was really all he was known for, probably all he was really capable of. I don't know if they knew that he could be a tough guy.
They show Lita stretching in a referee shirt, and Matt Hardy walks in, says tonight he can prove that he is the brains and the better wrestler between him and Jeff. Coming out of the Survivor Series, they did the split between the two, and they were going to have a Hardy versus Hardy match, which they had kind of... backed off of for a long time, and they were going to test the waters out here to split these two apart, feeling the Hardys had gone as far as they could, and this was their first of two attempts they would do to break these two up. And Lita says that she's always on Matt's side as his girlfriend, but she has to be impartial tonight. And that took us to a video of the Hardys featuring lots of old clips, sound of both guys putting the other over, and they actually worked in the Survivor Series finish, which I ranted about at the time of this. It was when Jeff Hardy, he had the match won, and instead of climbing down the cage, he did a swanton off the top, and it led to the Dudleys winning the match. Made no logical sense, and they worked this into the storyline.
It did make sense, though. Like, here's a guy who cares much more about theatrics and entertaining the crowd and just can't resist diving off of this cage onto this guy through a table versus winning the match. I thought it made fine sense.
I think if you're Jeff, if this is a match, an actual contest.
Well, that's what they're trying to say.
But what I liked about this was that I felt the best heel turns are ones where you can understand where the heel's coming from.
Yeah.
Matt was completely justified here. This is how I would react if... what would be a good analogy anyway? If you and I were going to do a podcast, and you decided...
Here it is. We're doing a 3-hour long podcast, and there's a Skype issue throughout the whole thing. Yet, for whatever reason, I decide to continue recording. I was just just let me talk a bit more. Let me get this bit in there. And then you're like, no, we should wrap. We gotta get out of here. We gotta cut this off. And then somehow it gets deleted at the end of the last thing I had to say.
Exactly.
And you would have been really pissed off.
Perfect analogy.
But we're both justified. Because, like, my whole thing is, I want people to listen to everything I have to say. And like, what I mean is, I really don't. I don't give a shit if people listen to. But Jeff, you could understand him as well, because he wanted to have this spectacular spot for all the people to see.
I'm a big fan of when you do turns and you can understand the perspective of the heel. Like when Jericho and Michaels had their feud, that was evident. Like Jericho brought up all these great points. It was like, I completely understand this.
Yeah.
But fans were fans of Shawn Michaels. And it was, I think you just get more interest by people when it's not something where The Miz just all of a sudden jumps off the apron.
It simply makes it more realistic, you know, and anything that seems more realistic will be more believable. And I thought also Matt just did a great job in this role. I really liked him as a heel, even dating back to this. I think everybody will think back to his, you know, Matt Hardy version 1 stuff as some of his best stuff a bit later on. But I thought even here, I thought he was tremendous. And I thought Jeff, just a very natural baby face, and Matt, just a tremendous heel. So I thought these two did some great work at this time.
So we went to the Hardy versus Hardy match. Lita was the referee. The crowd was chanting for Lita at the start of the match. Jeff wrestling in his baseball hat. And Matt working as the heel, obviously. And we had Matt going for a sleeper hold that Jeff got out of. Was looking for his own sleeper. Matt missed a leg drop off the second turnbuckle. And you could definitely see that they were trying to get these two past the idea of being, you know, doing all these big, high, spectacular spots. Like, they tried to work a wrestling match here. And whether it was the style they worked or just the fact that they didn't want to see this team break up, the crowd was kind of indifferent to these two. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like they didn't really know who to go for in this match. And they kind of struggled in that regard. However, I think that you almost had to do this with these two because they've been so much, especially Jeff, with just doing his big swanton and doing this reckless style, that I think you kind of had to go through this if you wanted this guy to get some longevity in his career and work a different style than just what he had been used to doing tag matches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff got crotched on the top and then into a tree of woe. And as Matt was going to attack him, Lita stopped to unhook his feet from the ropes. And then Matt went for a sunset flip over the top to the floor. Jeff blocked it, and he hit a Hurricane Rana on the floor. And then Matt goes after the left knee of Jeff. He applies a half crab. Jeff gets to the ropes. He goes for a figure four.
This is like some of the stuff that I really enjoyed, and like you mentioned, not really anything the Hardys are known for up until this point, like any type of psychology. But
I like this.
It was Matt taking advantage of his little brother's injured leg, and you know, at this point, it wasn't obviously a full blown heel turn yet. It was just, you know, brother versus brother. Clearly, Matt, you know, a bit upset, but it's like things like this. Of how, despite being the, you know, these two being friendly, him taking advantage of his little brother's injury, it was little things like that I thought were done really well.
They did a great spot where Matt was on the floor and Jeff went for a pescado, but he couldn't because his leg gave out, and continued to sell it. This was like the most selling Jeff had ever done at this point in the WWF, and they continued, both blocked each other's attempt at a twist of fate. Then Matt sat down on Jeff, grabbed the ropes for the pin, but Lita stopped him from cheating. And then Jeff blocked a twist of fate off the top that Matt was attempting. Matt falls down. Jeff hits the swanton. And then Lita goes to count. And right as she's hitting two, Matt puts his foot on the rope. Lita doesn't see it, counts three. And Jeff, before the three count, takes the leg off of the ropes and hooks it and gets the win 12 minutes and 32 seconds, with Matt upset after the match, protesting to Lita that he had his foot on the rope. The count should have been broken. You know, I thought, all things considered here, this is a match everyone goes back at and they just kind of classify it as a disaster. I thought it was a well-worked match, considering these two were just kind of in a different role than they had been, you know, positioned beforehand. It was just the crowd really wasn't into it, and I think it's very hard to break up tag teams that are very popular where people don't want to see them break up.
I didn't consider it a disaster at all. I didn't even know that. I'm surprised to hear that, because I thought...
Well, the result was they took these two off TV after this, and then they came back as a team in January, and they just went right back to the team. Like, they just kind of wrote off this turn.
So maybe, yeah, I am definitely having even trouble just recalling a lot of this stuff, but it feels like perhaps the angle was botched, but I thought this little moment within it was quite well done.
In fact, when they took them off TV and it was kind of, okay, we're going to go back to the drawing board, I remember Matt saying, I've come up with the idea for the greatest entrance ever. So he had some cool idea for their entrances. And I think it was the Royal Rumble they returned at. And their entrance was the lights go out and they had glow-in-the-dark jackets.
Oh, God.
Just didn't last too long.
Didn't last, but it worked for Jericho.
Oh, that's true. And Prince Devitt. Oh. He just blatantly took it from Jericho. Mm-hmm. And then, so they teamed for a few months in 2002, and then they went their separate ways during the brand split. Right. Jeff on Raw, where he was kind of hitting that rough patch and would end up released in 2003. And Matt went to SmackDown, where the following year, you'd get the version 1 stuff. That's and awesome. The biggest push of his career at that time. So that left Matt protesting at the end. Jim Ross notes that they have set a record in the San Diego Sports Arena for a family event. So if you take out all the sports that have ever taken place.
Those aren't family events?
I don't know. I don't think. I think
concerts, maybe they mean?
Maybe concerts aren't family events.
Some of them aren't.
So. Do you go with your family to a concert?
No, I assume they mean like. Maybe like age restrictions. Although like the concerts, I don't know. Maybe they do sex shows at this stadium.
It could be. Could be. I'm sure they pack them in.
Yeah.
Then they go to a segment where Trish Stratus knocks on The Rock's door. He's on the phone. And Trish just wanted to tell him that she thought the angle on Thursday at SmackDown was awesome. Where Rock put Vince's face into Rikishi's ass. Wishes Rock good luck and kisses him on the cheek. And Rock says, tonight, I'm only focused on being the undisputed champion. But afterwards, there will be lots of time to smell what I'm cooking as he then takes his hands and gyrates his dick.
He didn't do that.
Well, he put his hand down and kind of like rubbed his dick.
I don't know if he put the hand was on.
Well, it was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it was just like the thing he did.
Yeah, the hands could smell what.
Really, this is. What?
Nothing. Anyway, this was the family event.
This is what women like.
Yeah.
Girls love it when you just walk up.
Hey, I'm going to win the title tonight, but if you're down for some fellatio later on, guess what? I'm going to make some time.
And here's my penis. I'm pointing
it's right down there.
Yeah.
The Brahma Bull.
Well, she went crazy, so it must have worked. If you're The Rock, you can probably get away with anything.
Oh, probably.
Sexual harassment.
Next up, we went to the tag titles way. The Dudley Boys with Stacy Keibler, now part of the WWF, after turning on them. Defending against The Big Show and Kane.
The Big Show and Kane.
What a team.
What a team. And I will say, between The Big Show and Kane, they are probably tagged with every wrestler in existence.
They very well have at this point. I mean, my God, Kane's character goes back to 97. Big Show in WWF to 99.
Yeah.
These guys have had... That's like 30 years combined in the WWF for these two.
Yeah, and like these two, I mean, being the Giants, they're always kind of in that role.
29, Jim Powers, 29 years combined.
29,
yeah. I can't fuck this up.
Yeah, like, you know, they're always kind of the guys where, oh shit, we don't know what to do with them. Let's pair them with this guy. And I have no recollection of this tag team ever existing, and maybe for good reason, because I don't think it lasted that long.
This was the same year where Big Show had been sent down to Ohio Valley at one point to show you how far this guy had fallen. And then basically it was, look how much we're paying this guy to be at the Davis Arena every week. They brought him back up. He was supposed to lose a bunch of weight, really didn't. And then he was just, you know, he was thrown into some of the invasion stuff. And it was just, then he went through just all these teams. He was teaming with Kane one week. Then they put him with Billy Gunn. They were just trying Shoguns. Oh, terrible. I still think of that tag team every time Mauricio Shogun Hua fights.
Zero.
Every now and then. I try to block it out, but the wrestling side of me always remembers Billy Gunn and Big Show. It was amazing. Like I feel Big Show, it's only been the past couple of years where it's like a light went off for this guy. And he's been one of my favorite performers this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had.
But he was horrendous at one point.
Yeah. But he had that comeback, you know, and came back, lost all that weight.
Yeah. It was when Heyman was booking him in 2002, where he had that little run on SmackDown where they made him like a monster. And they would get away from that.
What
so
are we
often.
Learning here? That if you book a guy as a monster, it tends to work out? Not always, but...
I guess it helps.
Pretty often, yeah.
Keep a guy in short matches when he's not exactly a finesse worker. Mm-hmm. So, tag title match here.
The babyfaces had the advantage at the start. Bubba ran into Devon in the corner, and it sent both to the floor. Kane came off the top rope, jumping onto both. And then Keebler came into the ring. Big Show grabs her, pulls her pants down, and spanks her. This was a babyface spot 12 years ago. Today, that's a fireable offense.
Yeah.
Sexual harassment.
Still be a babyface spot.
Pantsed her and spanked her.
Yeah,
pantsed and spanked her.
This would be, like, horrific. Yeah. Imagine, like, Rob Ford did this. Like, the reporters would be just jaw on the floor.
Yeah. Do you know that now in Toronto, a friend of Dan Lavransky's is now doing bus tours in Toronto, taking you to all the, like, the crack house.
Stacey Case?
No, it's I don't know who it is.
Stacey's Case is selling shirts.
Yes, and yeah, so
he knows all the interesting people.
I know he does. Yeah. He has one of those Rob Ford shirts. Yeah, he wore it on Sunday.
Crackamania.
Yes. So yeah, you can go on a bus tour and go to all the hot spots of where Rob Ford's offenses have taken place.
That's actually a brilliant idea.
It's a hilarious idea, yeah. And it's super cheap.
Yeah.
So someone that can just
I want to go on that tour.
We should do a
what other reason do
bus
people,
tour?
I mean, no offense to Toronto. I love my city, but I mean. Not many reasons to come here if your options are, you know, New York, Chicago, which are all relatively close by, Montreal. Why would you come to Toronto? Well,
I think that it's hard when you live in Toronto to appreciate all that Toronto has. I think if I was a tourist, I'd want to go to Toronto.
Toronto's cool, but I mean, if you're from like out of the country, like there are cities that I feel do Toronto better than Toronto. No offense.
Well, Montreal is a really fun city, but I think Toronto sometimes gets a bad rap. There, you come here. No, there's lots nice. Of stuff to do.
It's great. I love living here. You have everything, healthcare.
Yeah. Well, some Americans wouldn't care for that.
Crack mayor.
Yep. Crack mayor. What more could you ask for?
Nothing.
The Dudleys double team Kane in the ring. They hit a neck breaker. They give the what's up headbutt to him. Keep him in their corner. They hit a double flapjack, knocking Show off the apron to keep the heat on Kane. Kane eventually comes back with a big boot and clotheslines the Dudleys to prevent a 3D. Big Show comes in. Bubba makes a save after a choke slam to Devon. And then Kane comes off the top, but Devon gets out of the way, and Kane takes out Big Show with a clothesline. This leads to Big Show and Kane arguing, and then Show misses with a shoulder block to Bubba, knocking Kane off the apron. Just complete miscommunication here by the babyfaces. And then the Dudleys hit another flapjack, knocking Big Show into the exposed turnbuckle in their corner, and they pin Big Show at 6 minutes and 50 seconds.
And still, World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Mythic Boys!
And it was not a pretty match!
I think he was a little too harsh on this. I've seen way worse.
It was okay.
Yeah, nothing great, yeah. But this wasn't the bowling shoe match that it could have been.
No.
The Dudleys always worked hard. Fat or skinny.
For sure. I'll say.
Lita's with Matt. She's apologizing in the locker room. He's pissed and giving her the silent treatment. And he grabs his gear and he just leaves without saying anything. Mm-hmm. This was like Jey Uso and Trinity on Total Divas Sunday Night minus the makeup at the end.
Did you watch? I guess we talked about it on Monday.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hadn't watched it by then.
I actually did.
Oh, you did? I forgot. Yeah. I was thinking of last week.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, it feels so long ago.
Yeah, we've talked a lot since then.
The theme song wave for this was Drowning Pool, Sinner. Because Bodies wasn't a very playable song during this time.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to go to the next track on the Drowning Pool CD.
They must use like 5 songs from whatever record they were promoting that year.
They used Bodies, they used this, and then WrestleMania, they had the live performance with another song.
Yeah, what was that called?
Falling, I have something, no idea.
Some type of... bad thing.
Something bad.
Dripping blood. Okay. Torture. Torturous skulls.
This was WrestleMania. I want to know the name of this song.
Drifting right? Pain.
Yeah, was that it? Drifting?
I'm just making shit up.
I'm totally lost here on songs. Okay.
Okay.
Drowning Pool. WrestleMania 18 song.
Yeah.
Tearaway.
Oh, Tearaway.
Like the pants.
Yeah,
Tearaways.
Song about Tearaway.
Tearaway.
Yeah.
All right.
It has to be something destructive.
I was not a fan of this Sinner song.
I can't tell you what it sounds like, man, because all these songs sound the same. Sorry.
We got a video on The Undertaker's epic heel turn. where he got into the ring with Vince McMahon and Jim Ross, and we thought The Undertaker was standing up for Jim Ross in Oklahoma when he said he's realized he kisses Vince's ass more than anyone. Such a bizarre, like, to put The Undertaker in this role was so weird, like this legendary figure, the ass kisser, and then turns to Jim Ross and says, are you going to kiss Vince's ass? And Ross says no. So Taker says, are you better than me? Attacks Ross, and this was where, this was just one of the most unsettling moments in wrestling history for me. Poor Jim Ross, his face forced into Vince's ass. This like had the, this had the tone of like a prison rape scene with Vince with the cowboy hat riding around with his ass hanging out. Jim Ross against his will being forced into his rectum in Oklahoma. It was just such a degrading angle.
But it wasn't against his will. He agreed to it.
He did agree to it. I'm saying in storyline form, this character was against his will.
Yeah.
So I forgot my story from earlier on. It was during the Hardys match where I'm watching this with my brother and my dad comes downstairs. I think I've told this story many a time, but I'll tell it again. And they did the video on Matt and Jeff Hardy getting ready for their match. And my dad says, this is horrible. Two brothers fighting. Right around Christmas time as well.
Yeah, you met, I heard you say that.
It's one of my favorite stories
it's
ever.
It's worth repeating. Right around Christmas time.
Right around. Terrible. Two brothers. Have you ever fought with your brother at Christmas time?
No. I don't think so. I don't even really recall fighting with my brothers. Really.
You always got along with them.
They're much older than me. They're like 10 and 12, like 12 and 13 years older than me. So
you would have been the referee in the match if they had a split.
I would have refereed their fight.
Yeah.
The two of them.
So anyway, this whole kiss my ass thing, somehow it led to a feud with Rob Van Dam, the hardcore champion. The highlight of this video package was Undertaker doing the Rob Van Dam pose. This needs to be a GIF file. Someone please upload this. Yeah. The Undertaker doing the Van Damme thumb pose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back then when he was the motorcycle Undertaker, you could buy that much more than anything that he would do now.
It's just now it's like he's this mythical figure in the WWE that you never see. He comes out once a year.
He's the most
He's Santa Claus.
He's the most well-protected wrestler in the entire company.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This might have been the debut of Undertaker's short hair.
Really?
I think so. Because all the video packages, it was him with the long hair.
Okay.
And then he came out here with the short hair.
Could have been.
Which he'd keep for a few years. They announced on Sunday Night Heat that this would be a hardcore title match. So clearly they were having a debate. Is The Undertaker above this title? And up until the day of, they felt, yes, we can't give him the hardcore title. It's The Undertaker, for Christ's sake. But they made it a hardcore title match. Match started off with Taker giving Van Damme a big boot. And Van Damme got crotched on the rope, sent to the floor. They were fighting on the floor into the audience. Van Damme got choked by a Mexican flag by The Undertaker in the crowd. Van Damme came back with a moonsault off this off these bleachers in the crowd and then hit him with a barricade. They put the barricade right on Van Damme's face, and Taker then stood on the barricade. And Jim Ross brought up the same thing I thought. It's like he's pinning him. His shoulders were down on the ground. It's a Falls Count Anywhere match. But no count was made. Van Damme stopped him from hitting a chair shot by hitting Taker with a fire extinguisher. Then Van Damme climbed onto a balcony and hit a relatively safe crossbody. I mean, Taker caught him.
Well, I love those. I love the ones that, you know, they
look spectacular, but little risk.
Yeah, I think those are the best.
Unlike Jeff Hardy or New Jack, who would kill themselves doing stuff off of these balconies. Van Damme attacks him with a trash can lid by the entrance area. Taker goes up to hit him for the last ride, but Van Damme grabs the video screen and holds onto it, then took a clothesline. Taker then was seated at a video screen and took a Van Damminator. He went for another Van Damminator, but Taker grabbed the chair, got out of the way, and he hit Van Damme with the chair. Van Damme went for another Van Damminator by the edge of the stage, missed it, and Taker chokeslams him off the stage through a table and pinned Van Damme at 11 minutes and 3 seconds, so The Undertaker wins the hardcore title.
Yes, he does.
Kind of couldn't beat the guy here when he had just turned heel. But Van Damme was at this point where this was kind of where you were seeing where he was slotted in the grand scheme of things. He was this really hot character coming in, and now he was kind of just settling into that kind of below title range area of the card.
Yeah. But I will say at this time, he still seemed incredibly motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And here in this match in particular, there are a lot of cool creative spots. I thought he and Taker had some pretty good chemistry. Taker is just as sort of the monster, taking a lot of the big bumps. But Taker's a guy who's mobile enough to be able to dish out a lot of this creativity as well. You know, a lot of cool spots with the set. Finish with the chokeslam off the stage I thought was done well. Not a hardcore match where they really went crazy with too many, like...
They did enough, though.
I mean, what I mean is, like crazy spots,
yeah,
where these guys really killed each other in real life, but like still full of activity, very entertaining, and I thought it was well done.
Flair is on the phone in the back. He's reporting to us that the show is awesome so far. Has it been awesome thus far?
I don't know if I'd say awesome. Like, it's been good. Like, yeah, I'd say good.
One thing I really notice watching these shows is, like, not that they're appreciably better, but so much more depth. It was like, mm-hmm. you had stuff up and down the card with characters that felt over at the time.
Yeah.
And now it's
a peak of that, right?
Like, look at this Sunday's pay-per-view. I mean, you go from that unification match, you got the handicap matches with Punk and Bryan, but mm-hmm. then it's like Langston and Sandow. I don't know. Maybe I'll view it better 5 years from now looking back.
Yeah,
but
you might.
Who knows? Trish Stratus. Oh, before we get to that, Chris Jericho walks in to Ric Flair. What did you make of his hair at this point, Way? Like, I know...
With the red tips?
Horrible in hindsight, I
honestly... Never
he had this tied back, so it was like he had blonde hair with his roots growing in that were dirty blonde, and then the red ponytail.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a great look for Jericho. I'm no fashion expert, but I don't know. I felt like for a long time there he was experimenting, trying to see what worked. And what
leather pants and red tips?
Yeah,
it was an awkward phase.
I never thought he looked fine. He looked fine, but
he brags about beating The Rock twice, and he pleads his case to Flair of why he should win tonight, and says that tomorrow night Flair can present Jericho with the Undisputed Championship, which was funny because they actually didn't create an Undisputed Championship for Chris Jericho. He had to lug around the two titles until the real Undisputed Champion was crowned in Triple H. And he got his solo title.
But he's still the Undisputed Champion.
He was, but not enough for them to give him the new title.
Actually, it looks cooler with both belts. Like, in all these pictures now you see of Jericho from this time, he's holding both belts. It looks much more impressive.
That always struck me with Ultimo Dragon when he had, like, his eight titles.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit. Yeah. I know that seven of these titles probably mean nothing, but... They look cool.
Like, it's like the Triple Crown.
Yep.
Three belts.
But they've merged that into one belt.
Oh, they have?
They have. And then we got the Triple H YouTube Beautiful Day promo. I have not watched this thing in years, Way.
Oh, this wasn't on my version.
Oh, it wasn't?
No.
Oh.
But I mean, I'm familiar with it, of course.
Man, was this awesome. I was so excited at the end of this promo for Triple H's return 12 years ago.
I fucking hate this song, but I thought this...
This is what I still think of. When I see this song, I think of Triple H.
Yeah.
This is the blueprint of return videos, and you watch this video, Jesus Christ, was it good.
Well, this is the time, during that time, I mean, I don't know if it was this year. Yeah, it really was, you know, this year and the year after where they did all those Desire videos. Which
listed, they put the Desire font
me,
on
like,
it.
Personally, they were, like, almost influenced me to get into video editing just, you know, because they're all really well done, incredibly powerful, and to this day, some of the best work that, you know, this highly respected production team is still known for.
Have you seen the news that they are going to do a video, a DVD on the WWF's music with Jim Johnston?
I really look forward to that. I hope they don't half-ass that one, because from what the poll, like, I saw that it was one of the original ideas in the poll, and how, you know, these would only be sort of like the bargain bin, you know, $9.99 DVDs that they were kind of throwing together.
Oh, really?
But, from what I could tell... It seems like there might be a bit of a documentary in there, and I hope that they put as much effort into this as something else. I mean, I looked at some of these other choices in that poll.
They're really scratching the bottom of the barrel.
Well, they were just terrible, and like these were like, what were they, like, best?
The best of dark matches.
Yeah, best of what is that? The Saturday Morning Slam,
which was around for a year.
Best of
There's
Velocity? There's it, a that would be cool. Yes.
That I was gonna say, because they could, if they marketed that one to the hardcores. Yeah. I mean, you have like Cena, Bryan Danielson. Yeah, yeah, you have Low-Key in there. That could be a cool one because they had so many indie workers
there.
There
also like such short matches on Velocity. Anyway, yeah, that's besides the point. But none of those really warranted documentaries. This one though, to me, completely stood out from the pack because this is one that is like, you could do a whole 3-hour thing on.
You could go back to like Memphis introducing music and then the Freebirds and just, there's so much you could do music with that.
Yeah. And
like a whole historical look at it.
I just personally hope that they put as much care into something like this as they did with, you know, the history of the WWE documentary.
I don't think they will.
I don't think they will, but I personally think it deserves it. I mean, clearly, like, I'm just trying to gauge what they think that the audience wants, and if they're putting an amazing idea like this in there with the best of Saturday Morning Slam, like on that level, I just don't know if they're that sure what the audience wants. Like, you know, this is something that clearly everybody wants, but to put it next to the options of best of Divas matches.
We're not that far away from having like a DVD where Joey Styles reads the best WWE.com articles.
Yeah, that sounds lame. But I mean, you know, if this is successful, and I hope it will be, I hope they do more of the same. Not focusing necessarily on matches, but basically the everything that surrounds pro wrestling that we all find so interesting. I'm curious why they haven't done another one of those greatest rivalry things like they did with Shawn and Bret.
I'm surprised too. Like, it's not like it's an expensive production. You're flying in two guys to sit down for 3 hours.
Like a shooter interview, basically.
Put some matches on of their feud, and you have them talk for 2 hours.
Yeah,
I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm surprised they have.
And you have access to anybody you want, essentially, that's out there.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm very surprised too because I love that Shawn Bret DVD, and you have enough combinations. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Next up was Trish Stratus and Jacqueline for the women's title. Stratus had just won her first title the month prior. And early on, we saw an O'Connor roll by Jackie for a two count. Immediately, they start chants of "We want puppies." And this was still at the point where, I mean, the growth of the Divas division was absolutely in its infancy. You can see Trish was still very green at this point, and what the Divas division would become in 2003 was a far cry from where it was at this point.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, you know, it really is the growth of Trish Stratus sort of as the figurehead of that division, and as she progressed, so did the whole, you know. I mean, not to say like somebody like Jackie totally could work, but, you know.
Trish was very inexperienced at this point.
She was getting better, but still not that great.
Now, you got chants like this from the crowd, which you understand, but, you know, if the idea was we really want to push this division now, boy, did Jerry Lawler just do tons to, like, this guy literally had a big, analyzing her bra color.
I noticed this, especially during his return. Like, before Lawler left, he was still playing sort of the heel, and of course he would do the whole puppies thing, but once he came back, I don't know if this was maybe in reaction to Heyman, who was just a pure heel, but when Lawler came back, and up until now, he never went full heel again. He was just sort of the uncle who loved, creeping on younger ladies. And that was just his whole gimmick.
It came Quagmire before Family Guy was even on the air.
Sure. But that was just his whole gimmick. And I imagine, you know, his character, quote unquote, at the time, was simply to be the guy to, you know, go crazy over the girls.
Trish had this very awkward roll-up attempt. Then she went for the Stratus faction, but Jackie blocked it. Takes a drop kick from behind, and Jackie gets a two count. Then Trish was in the corner, and it was like they almost clocked heads or something, and they just fell down to the mat. And then it ended with a backslide by Trish to pin her at 3:35. Wasn't a very good match. It was very short, and it was clumsy at times. And they shake hands after the match. And Lawler, even during the next like recap where they're on camera, is just like staring at Trish. And Ross calls him on it. And it was just very weird. But very much what his character was. Yeah. Creepy. So away from Trish and Jacqueline, we move on. Jim Ross recaps. Wait,
did you do something to the sound?
I hit a button or something. I don't know. Does it sound different in your headset? It
sounds like it's completely different. Time, even.
What do you mean time? It's still...
It feels like we've time-traveled here.
Is it Monday? No, it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's had one of those weird moments.
Okay.
Well, Jim Ross recaps SmackDown and how Austin screwed up Vince's plan. We don't know what Vince's plan exactly was on SmackDown, but it led to Rock trying to get Vince to kiss his ass, where we got to see The Rock's bare ass during this segment on SmackDown. Again, family show.
I imagine he's shown worse on his in his movies.
I don't know.
Never seen his ass?
I don't think
movies?
I've ever seen his ass in a movie. Okay. Then he brought out Jim Ross, which led to Michael Cole saying, maybe JR is wearing a thong. We did not see his ass. But then stops Ross from taking his pants off, brings out Trish, and Vince is all excited here. Trish was wearing a thong, and Vince was all excited to kiss her ass when Rock stopped him and then finally brought out Rikishi. And then as Rock forced Vince's face into Rikishi's ass, they thought this wasn't enough. We've got to put fart sound effects over top of this video. This is what you would have done in post, wouldn't you, Way? To really accentuate?
It was actually Lawler making those farts.
I don't know if those were live sounds.
I'm pretty sure they were.
Well, that's...
They sounded like genuine Jerry Lawler fart sounds.
I don't know. These sounded... I think they were sound effects. But it added that the Rock then announced that the Kiss My Ass Club was closed. And they come back and Jim Ross caps off the video by saying, that was a great moment.
Huh.
Of great moments, this one doesn't rank up there for
me. Well, depends what you consider a great moment. I thought it was memorable, sure, funny, yeah. I don't know why, it was on a pay-per-view. I guess they liked it so much.
This is just a recap. This was like the Titus thing, where he vomited, and felt the need to do a video package of it for Raw. We saw it again at the Slammys nominated. They love this shit.
They liked it so much that they decided to show it.
And they wonder why they're considered low rent by most advertisers.
Sure.
This kind of shit goes a long way. Rikishi, just coincidentally, is at WWF New York, and he said, I thought Vince's head would need to be surgically removed from my ass.
Huh.
Hilarious. And then we get set for our unification. Four wrestlers, three matches, two titles, one undisputed champion. And we got a Survivor Series video here to set up the match. This featured Angle's babyface turn at Survivor Series, his heel turn the next night, Flair debuting, setting up the unification, and then into a montage to Drowning Pool's Sinner.
Mm-hmm.
Great song. And our first matchup was Steve Austin against Kurt Angle for the WWF title. These two had that awesome match at SummerSlam earlier that year that we have since reviewed. So I had high hopes for this match.
They had a number of matches.
They had lots of great matches in 2001. These two they had a tremendous chemistry together, I felt.
Yeah, despite them both changing heel babyface roles probably 10 times each.
Yep. They had some interesting history here. They basically had this world title date back to 1905 with Frank Gotch and George Hackenschmidt.
And is that what they consider, is that what they still recognize today?
Well, it's very convoluted. I mean, there was at one point like four different world titles that were essentially recognized with the WWA, AWA, NWA, WWWF. There was a lot of splintering off. The NWA didn't form till 1948. I mean, it's a very convoluted history, but most trace it back to 1905, but Tom Jenkins was in the mix as well. But sure, it makes for a great story. 1905. I went. Does John Cena's current world title? I guess they just tack that on. It goes back to 1905.
Fine.
Why not?
I'm not going to look it up. So yeah.
The crowd was chanting "What" at the start, and Angle early on goes for the ankle lock. Did you notice in this match, Way, that it felt like? Like, Austin and Angle had flipped to Angle's the heel, Austin's the babyface, and yet I found the majority of this match, Angle, if I was just watching this cold, I would have assumed Angle was the babyface, and Austin played kind of the heel that was selling and kind of still playing that heel role, I felt.
I didn't find that. I mean, for the most part, it was Angle that was working on Austin's, injured knees.
He was doing all these fire-up spots on Austin, and Austin was kind of bailing at times.
I didn't really notice that.
Well, I did.
You're crazy.
No, I'm not. Should we mention our sponsors, Way?
Yes.
Who's our show brought to us by today? This is a big one for us.
Well, I mean, we were drinking coffee.
We were?
We moved on from coffee. Now we are sponsored by the king of beers, Budweiser.
Whoa, legal department. Do you have to go move your car?
No, I do. But anyway.
That's a horrible segue about drinking beer and you got to go move a car?
Yeah, I'm not going to move my car right now.
Very good.
But Budweiser, the king of beers.
Yeah.
Anheuser-Busch. This is the famous Budweiser beer.
Yeah.
We know of no brand produced by any other brewer, which costs so much to brew and age. Our exclusive Beechwood aging produces a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability you will find in no other beer at any price. So Budweiser beer... thanks for sponsoring us.
So I guess you could say if Budweiser is the king of beers, that would make Rikishi and Vince McMahon the king of rears. The Kiss My Ass Club.
Yeah, I got that.
That's the tie-in.
Oh, yeah.
Budweiser.
I know. Yeah, I know you're going to go there.
We've only had like one, everybody. As I said, Angle early on went for an ankle lock. Austin blocked a German suplex. Angle ran at Austin, got tossed over the top to the floor. Ross breaks down how Angle is right-handed, and he is stronger on the right side of his body than the left, but not really explain why Austin was working on the left side of that. Maybe because he was going after the weaker side of his body.
I guess so. Yeah.
I wonder if Angle's just like, he's like, goes in half. Like, it's the right side of his body that has done all this great accomplishments, and the left side's held him back.
I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but at least, like, I know in jiu-jitsu, that could be the case for some people.
Sure.
You know, some people like to, when they pass guard, go towards one side of their opponent because they know one side might be weaker than the other.
Can I say, after being at jiu-jitsu with you on Monday, when you're rolling, you look so calm.
Yeah, I don't know what you're looking at, but like when we were rolling, at least
your class, it was like 45 minutes of just rolling.
Yeah, there was a lot of rolling in that class. But when we were starting out, it was just soft rolling, what they call soft rolling, and what that is just like kind of just a flowing into different positions. Like you're not putting up too much resistance. If your opponent's going for something, let them kind of have it, and then just you escape, and then you go from place to place. It's just a way to discover positions. So you're too much effort.
We did it at the end for like 10 minutes or so.
You were going really hard though.
Well, yeah, I was so gassed.
You don't have to. The important thing is to focus on your breathing, and I think it'll just.
There was no focus on my breathing at all.
Well,
my achievement was getting out of his closed guard and into side control.
That's great.
That was my big achievement.
No, that's cool, man. But
and then he caught me with a triangle later.
I mean, but it's like when you're just training, it's not like you gotta go crazy all the time.
I was just trying to last.
Sure. Yeah, and I think a key is like just knowing how to breathe.
I'm gonna try and learn that.
Sure.
Austin, his legs got wrapped around the post, and Angle was hitting him with a series of chops, applied the figure four around the post, and then goes back to the ankle lock, and Austin kicks him off. Austin then got sent sternum first into into the corner, and then Angle hit three German suplexes. Remember that Austin came off neck surgery, and he allowed Angle and Benoit to just throw him around like a madman.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Angle goes to the top, misses his moonsault, which just one of the most beautiful moonsaults Kurt Angle's.
The thing about Kurt Angle, especially like over these couple of years from this point of his career, like when he debuted, not so much, but like, I don't know, at some point something clicked, and he started to adopt a lot of other people's moves, like the German suplexes, like here he did the figure four around the post even. But like the thing about,
added little things to make them his own. Like
the,
I didn't
know. Well, the thing about him is that like he does these moves almost better than the originator at times, because everything he does is just, it just looks so perfect.
Yeah.
Even that moonsault, he's just it's like he studies the move. He figures out exactly what makes that move work, and he does it exactly the way it needs to be done.
Yeah. Everyone always looks at Muda's moonsault. For my money, for just sheer beauty, it's Angle's.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful moonsault, way.
Oh, yeah.
Stunningly gorgeous.
I would make sweet love to that moonsault.
The height he gets on it is incredible.
Yeah.
And Angle, like, if you look at him today, he's probably walking around at, like, 210, 215. He was a jack 250, 260 at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know how he got that
big.
He
never hit that moonsault, though. Like, the guy would always get out of the way.
I think
he
hit it the occasional time, but I think everyone thought of Hardcore Holly and was like, I'm not taking that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was a devastating injury. Angle goes to the top and misses the moonsault, and that leads to Austin then hitting a series of five German suplexes. Angle
that looked even worse than him taking it.
Austin was not
well on form. Wait, these Germans, like, well, very sloppy.
Well, yeah, and the problem is, like, first of all, like, I'm sure he doesn't have that much mobility, but also he's just taller than Angle, and so it looked a little awkward.
If you want to hear more of where Kurt Angle might have gotten some of his moves from, do listen to W.H. Park and his look at Koji Kanemoto. And some of the – it was really interesting. W.H. goes over all these kind of moves that Kanemoto introduced that made its way over to North America that you associate with guys like Angle, with Joe, and a lot of them originated with Kanemoto. I think he's one of the more underappreciated junior heavyweights of that 90s division. I can't stress enough. I really enjoyed that Kanemoto look back, and it plays into this
month,
as well.
This month's
the December edition, which is up on the site right now in iTunes. So anyway, after the Germans, Angle hits him with a low blow, hits the Angle Slam, gets a two count. Then Angle goes for the stunner. It's blocked, and Austin hits the stunner. Big, big pop for the stunner, and Austin pins him at 15 minutes and 2 seconds. Good match. Definitely not at their level of SummerSlam. But I really enjoyed this match a lot. It might have been my favorite match of the show.
Mine too. I thought it was really good. Both these guys just had fantastic chemistry and Angle top of his game at this point.
Afterwards, Jim Ross says, most people assumed it would come down to Austin and Rock for the unified title, and we are 50% of the way there. Mm-hmm. Was this not telegraphing an upset?
Yeah.
If you were watching live at the time.
Yes, yes.
We had to break up these title matches with something, Way.
Duh.
So we cut to Trish Stratus in a towel.
Hello, good looking.
What are you doing in here?
You know, Trish, I was doing some thinking. The last week, you gave Rock a thank you kiss. Well, tonight, I thought I'd make you the luckiest chick on the planet and come in here and give you a little congratulations kiss. But, baby, I gotta warn you. Once you've had test, you can forget about the rest. Now pucker up, baby. This is your lucky night.
Are you crazy?
And Test says that he wants a kiss from Trish. And says, once you've had test, you can forget about the rest. And then Trish is outraged by this. Test calls her a tease and kicks him out of the room. And throws the door closed as this cameraman is stuck in this room with Trish in a towel.
Yeah, the cameraman.
What a weird segment to just, well, like, we got to break it up with something.
No, basically the storyline is Tess can't get fired because he has immunity. And therefore,
that includes sexual harassment.
Yep. I guess he can't go to jail either.
No.
You're immune from everything in life.
He's,
you do drugs, you can just sell drugs, you can kill people. He's one immunity, yeah.
The Rock and Chris Jericho was next for the WCW title. They really had a great series of matches in late 2001. The highlight to me was No Mercy of that year, where it was really Jericho getting elevated a lot by The Rock. And Ross brings up names like Whipper Billy Watson. Lawler mentions Gene Kaniski as Canadian NWA champions of the past to compare with Chris Jericho. There was a leapfrog from The Rock early on. They head to the floor and fight at the Spanish announce desk. There was a top reverse elbow by Jericho into the ring. Jericho had the advantage, but then runs into an overhead suplex and a Samoan drop. But then Jericho rebounds, starts wearing him down, hits a lion salt for a two count. And then Jericho gets crotched on the top, knocks Rock down, and hits a cross body for a two count. We saw Jericho catapult Rock into the ring post on the floor. And then Jericho clears the announce desk and goes to Rock bottom, Rock through it. Rock counters and DDTs both through the table. And eventually, Jericho blocks a Rock bottom and hits this finish that he was using for a time. It was pretty much the stroke, which never really caught on into his repertoire. And the crowd was dead here. And Ross acknowledged it, saying they are in stunned silence that Jericho has hit this move on the Rock. Jericho goes for the people's elbow.
They just don't know. That move just wasn't over.
Not really. And applies a sharpshooter. Rock does. Jericho counters it. He goes for a sharpshooter and gets it. Rock is teasing that he's out. The sharpshooter barely looked applied. After watching so many people try this sharpshooter, I have more appreciation for how Brett made it look like such a devastating maneuver, because it seems no one can really apply a good-looking sharpshooter outside of Bret Hart.
Yeah.
I mean, this one didn't look good. Rock's never looked great.
Yeah.
Well, Rock's is exceptionally bad.
Rock applied a small package for a two count and then hits the Rock bottom. Both men are down. Vince McMahon runs down as Rock gets on top, but Earl Hebner is distracted. Rock goes to the floor and knocks Vince off the apron. Rock then goes for the people's elbow. Vince is on the apron again, gets thrown into the ring by Rock, hits his elbow drop on Jericho, and then goes to attack Vince. And this allows Jericho to low blow Rock and hit the Rock bottom to pin the Rock 19 minutes and 5 seconds and win the world title. And obviously this was the surprise finish for a lot of people, but to me this was kind of indicative of the whole Jericho title run, where it was like, okay, we're booking him as the heel that somehow pulls out a victory, but it was, he really needed that big push to the main event, and he was more presented as like this fluke champion that held on to the title.
Yeah.
And that was the start of this. It's like this match.
They saw him at a level, and that was beneath the Rock. And
the main guys.
Even though they had him beat these guys, he wasn't really above their level. And yeah, I think it just came down to even a small thing like him beating the Rock with the Rock's finisher. I mean, could it have really hurt them to let Jericho hit the Rock bottom and then do his lines insult on top of that for the win, just to get, you know, to say that he used his own move to win? I mean, yeah, for sure. I liked watching this match just to see, like, just to wonder, like, at the point what Jericho was going, what he had going through his mind, you know, at this point, obviously being told he was going to become the champion. Just to wonder what type of pressure he had going through him on the biggest night of his career up to this point.
Probably tons, knowing that he's going over, he's got to do two matches. I mean, he was going to work over 30 minutes together with Rock and Austin, no less. I mean, it was probably huge for him. And they went right into the next match as Austin came out, and he goes after Jericho. Angle is in the ring and hits Austin with a chair before the bell rings. Rock comes back and hits a Rock bottom to Jericho. So both men are laying as the match officially begins.
And a good way to give Jericho some rest, I guess.
Sure. Fans are all chanting for Triple H here. There was no Triple H. And Jericho would get on top of Austin and stomp him, yelling, "Come on, Austin! Fuck you, Austin!" And Jericho blocked a stunner early in the match, gets knocked to the floor and then sent into the post by Austin, and then a second time into the post. They go onto the Spanish announce table. Jericho blocks a stunner. He tries for the walls, which was playing off of the Triple H spot in San Jose with the torn quad of giving him the walls on the table. And it ends with a...
It hurts more when it's on top of a table.
It definitely does, especially if there's a fan that's tied around their legs.
Yeah.
But anyway, Austin flipped him off literally with his legs, and Jericho took a bump onto the floor. Austin would run shoulder first into the post as they got back into the ring. Jericho had a modified Fujiwara armbar. Jericho comes off the ropes with a flying forearm. Austin ducks, and Jericho takes out Earl Hebner. And Jericho hits another low blow, a terrible-looking stunner. And then Vince comes down, waving down Nick Patrick to count three. Ric Flair comes out, pulls Nick Patrick out, and decks Patrick. Vince then knocks out Ric Flair with a punch, which angered many people at the time. Vince knocking out Ric Flair. And then sent Ric Flair into the post. Austin then decks McMahon, is stomping him on the floor. Jericho comes off the ropes, and Austin applies the walls of Jericho. Jericho is tapping out to his own finish, but the referee is out. And then out of the crowd comes Booker T, who had disappeared since the Survivor Series. He has the world title and clocks Austin with the belt, runs through the crowd. They state he doesn't work here. And then Jericho climbs on top of Austin, and the referee counts three at 12 minutes and 36 seconds. And they state how McMahon couldn't afford to have Austin win the title, and as McMahon said in his opening promo, he who laughs last laughs loudest, and confetti came down from the ceiling as Vince held up Jericho's arm. I really didn't like this last match. It felt so rushed. It was all these shortcuts, lots of run-ins, and to me it wasn't really a crowning moment for Chris Jericho. It was like the guy totally backdoored into this win. And there's some heels where that works great for. And everyone goes back to Flair. Jericho was not Flair at this point. He really needed everything he could get. And it just seemed that right from day one, he was a mid-carder that had snuck into the main event. That's what it felt like.
It's the same problem that, you know, they've had with a lot of the Money in the Bank winners. Even like
that's a good comparison.
Daniel Bryan, when he was a champion, it's just like guys that they, for some reason, feel like putting the title on but don't want to go all the way with. And it's interesting to look back and see that that problem was evident even back then. And it certainly hurt them all the way up until WrestleMania when they had to have this guy drop the title to Triple H. What exactly happened with Booker? Like, what was Booker's reason for attacking? He was feuding with Austin?
They needed a reason for Booker to come back, and costing Austin the big match was it. The SmackDown after this show was where they did the infamous grocery brawl. Yeah, classic. Mm-hmm. And it never really led to much other than, you know, killing some time for Austin on TV.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was that. I actually don't...
People were really excited. You know, Jericho's a fresh face. And I mean, he was someone that a lot of the... You know, a lot of hardcore fans really wanted to see make it to the top. But you compare this to when Jericho got that pin over Triple H on TV to win the title, and then they turned it back. I mean... That, to me, was a big title win moment. This was just, I don't know, it just felt like you're not really, you're putting the title on this guy, but you're not behind this guy.
Right.
So that was Vengeance. It was an average show. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I really enjoyed Austin and Angle. Jericho and Rock was good, but to me, Austin Angle was match of the night. And the final match really disappointed. Maybe it was just seeing back-to-back matches with the same guy, and it was rushed. I mean, a 12-minute last match. I don't know. I can only watch.
It's still a very impressive performance to just be out there for that long.
Oh, it definitely is. But using the announce table and the post, it wore thin on me by this point.
6 out of 10.
All right. Well, that was Vengeance. How do you want to do this? Do you want me to do feedback right now until 2:30?
Sure.
Or do you want me to just do it on my own? I can do
just
it at
do
home.
Do it now.
Okay.
We don't have to do everything. You want me to start?
All right, let's go on over now for your feedback to the show, and Wave's going to kick us off.
We got a Christian Small who says the tagline for the show should have been "Back to business as usual." Outside of test immunity and the unification, you wouldn't have known that there was an alliance coming into the show. Everything just went back to how it was before the angle, it seemed. This show just had a raw feel to it and not a pay-per-view. Everything before the final three matches just felt thrown together, even though they had storylines. I didn't get the point of the whole Hardy versus Hardy angle. Is there back as a team by the next month? Taker versus Van Damme just looked weird on paper to me. Just too random of a match. Would have to give this show a 6 out of 10.
All right, we go to Alan Jones. For going back and seeing how this would compare to modern-day WWE, I'd say in the general match quality, this was better than some of the more recent pay-per-views. However, this wasn't really the best example to go back and compare. The main events were great, particularly the first two, and some of the undercard matches were quite entertaining. One thing that was nice was that there were a few matches on this card that had great backgrounds and didn't necessarily have a title tied to them. Nowadays, it seems that it's hard to come by. Sometimes the matches feel too thrown together. This show was definitely not the best example of the era, but it was a good way to see that what an average WWF pay-per-view was like at the time, and in my opinion, looked pretty awesome. If that was the average above what would be considered a shitty pay-per-view.
We got a Ryan who says, the show itself was good, but the main event story with unifying the titles could have been built so much better over a long period of time. And I remember at the time thinking it was all a bit rushed. So soon after the Survivor Series, one company survives the previous month. In saying that, though, in terms of the overall in-ring, I thought it was a pretty solid card with some great workers from top to bottom, and it's only when I go back and watch these shows I remember just how over almost everyone on the roster was.
Derek from Denton, Texas. I didn't think this show was that good. It had some good matches on here, but none of them were great. Before watching this whole show again for this review, the only matches I remember being on here was the hardcore title match and the three matches for the Undisputed title. I did like William Regal's promo before his match with Edge, but the match didn't deliver to me, which can be said for pretty much all the matches on the show. I will admit, I'm happy that it was Chris Jericho who won the Undisputed title first, even though his title reign wasn't that great. Because of the unification match, I give the show a 6 out of 10. Also, John, I know you like the Christmas blend at Starbucks, but the next time you go, you should try their peppermint mocha. It's great. I have tried the peppermint mocha, and it definitely gets a thumbs up. Either the Frappuccino or the peppermint mocha, like hot chocolate style.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the peppermint mocha as well.
Oh, it's so good. Probably 10 million calories, but it's incredible.
They should keep that around.
But
you know what? Then it wouldn't be as special.
I have an insider at Starbucks who tells me it's not on the menu, but you can order it year-round if you just ask for it. Yep. They have all the ingredients to make it with their regular stuff.
What else can you order on the side.
I'll get an update.
Yeah, all the secrets.
I have someone high up in Starbucks in my family.
Okay. Alexander Rios. Now onto the show itself. For an Attitude Era show, this one really was in a no-man's land of sorts, being in the period between the Invasion and the brand extension, and the many WWF Desire videos with Creed. The real boom period of creative innovation was certainly at an end, and only the deepest, most talented roster ever assembled, thank you Jim Ross, was able to hold things together. Main events aside, what I'm curious about was that Hardcore Championship match. I'm sure there was a valid reason for this in 01, but with 2013 eyes, a hardcore match between Taker and Rob Van Dam. And seriously, Taker as Hardcore Champion, and late 01 going into 02, this felt like an insult to the man. Finally, a question for you both. Should an undisputed champion carry both title belts, or should it be a true unification with one new belt?
I prefer the one title, myself.
I do too. I mean, I think at the end of the match, of the unification match, it's a great visual to see a guy hold both belts. You know, maybe have that.
If you're a worker, you don't want to be traveling with these titles. I think most guys in the business would love it if they just got a card they could put on their wallet that says WWE Champion instead of carrying these things around all the house shows.
And you mean like when they celebrate at the end of a match, they hold up
a card? They hold up a card. Maybe it's framed, something like that.
I think that's a terrible idea.
Doesn't have to go through a metal detector or anything like that. Because they have titles that they put on TV, and those stay with production. But then for all the live events, they have a separate replica title that they come out with that they got to travel.
But I'm sure a lot of them get a kick out of it, you know what I mean? Just to have it around.
Probably after the third time where they got to pull it out and show the person at customs, sure it gets a little annoying. Aram Nasrallah. So 12 years later, and Albert is still in a comedy tag team. I remember hating the booking of Y2J winning and that Booker T doing the run-in, which led to the infamous supermarket fight with Steve Austin. Plus, the Hardy feud takes number one, which I think they reunited at the following pay-per-view. Why was Triple H on the poster if he didn't return anyway? 5 Pearl River plunges out of 10. We answered all those questions, so it was just they were hoping for him to return, but they felt it made more sense for January 7th.
Skull Captain says, I'm sure that the WWF wanted to book this pay-per-view as a fresh start after the botched invasion. It certainly had the sense of setting up new programs for the remaining talent. I've never been sure if Y2J was given the nod, so simply that Triple H could come back and win the title at WrestleMania, but I just don't think they thought that far ahead.
Sean from New Jersey, the big thing I remember from this event back in 01, other than the title unification win by Jericho, was the online speculation that Hunter was set to make his big return on the show after suffering his first quad injury. The reason for this, he was on the pay-per-view poster, the commercial leading up to the event, and a main theme was sledgehammers. Once again, wrestling fans fell for the old pay-per-view posters mean something trick. There was also local advertising that Hunter was going to be on this show, more than just the poster. Overall, the show was average at best, with the only draw being the unification. On an unrelated note, you guys have been saying recently that Total Divas doesn't really attract non-wrestling fans into watching the current product. However, I have a first-hand account of this actually happening. An ex-girlfriend of mine, with no real interest in wrestling, began watching Total Divas a few months ago. I was amazed to find out she's now hooked on the WWE product and has even bought tickets to the SmackDown taping in Philadelphia next month. Call it what you will, but I can officially say Total Divas has brought at least one female viewer into pro wrestling. Maybe Sean's got a reunion with an ex over Total Divas.
Ooh, wow.
Now they have something to watch together.
That would be interesting.
That would be wonderful.
That would be a first.
wrestling leading to a couple getting together.
Yeah. Saha from Edinburgh, Scotland. Although there are a few moments in this pay-per-view that are memorable, hearing JR talk about not knowing what it was like to have his job secure for even a year was pretty funny and moving at the same time, as even way back with his excellent commentary chemistry with the King enhancing the product, he was very aware of his employment being at the whim of Vince, who always seemed to have it out for him.
Mark from Birmingham, England. It'll be interesting to compare this show to TLC on Sunday. I thought overall it was kind of average. They could have done a better job making the unification match seem more important. The acting throughout the show was god-awful, although I did actually enjoy the unusual video that started off the pay-per-view with that piece of music, which I'm not cultured enough to know the name of. Will not be purchasing TLC. Am I the only person who's sensing a... Okay, well, this is all about current stuff. 5 shiny Matt Hardy t-shirts out of 10 he gives this show.
Finally, from Berserko, he says, the pay-per-view was good, not the best the WWF has to offer. I actually enjoyed most of the matches to a certain degree. The wrestling that Austin, Angle, and Jericho displayed was nice. Although many of the matches had been done previously in WWF shows, the matches were not boring. And he just basically says, 8 test. Oh, that's not nice.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your feedback. Clearly a well-remembered show amongst many people, which... I will say the most positive thing is Jericho has kept this show alive in so many promos and made this important to himself. The night I beat Rock in Austin in one night and made it important over time.
And honestly, who remembers the quality of the matches? You know, it just like, why wouldn't he take advantage of that?
Very smart on his part. You make a historical moment historical by constantly repeating it.
Yeah.
All right, so that was Vengeance. Thank you to your feedback. We hope you all enjoyed the show. We're going to get on out of here. But next week, Way, this is really weird because we might talk to you on... Are we going to do Impact on Friday?
Probably not,
yeah. Right? We have a lot of stuff going on Friday. And
we're
going
to be drunk.
We might be on a plane on Friday morning as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, guys, we probably are not going to have Impact this week, but it's not like you have a shortage of stuff to listen to. New Bauer and Pollock is up later tonight. What's Next is coming out on Thursday. You have the MMA report, getting ready for the Fox 9 event on Saturday. And go back and listen to stuff. We talked for almost 2 hours about Raw. You've got The Law, Braden's entire interview with Maria Kanellis on the site. So liveaudiowrestling.com. That's where you want to go for tons of wrestling MMA audio. And you can also subscribe on iTunes. What do you want to review next week, Way?
It's really up to... I don't know.
You know what? I'm gonna ask the message board, okay? Reply here. I want something that is somewhat Christmas-themed. I'm very much in the Christmas mood. Okay. Something wrestling and some tie into Christmas. So post your replies on the message board. And I'm not going to make it a vote. I'm going to pick what I want to pick out of those. And Way, I hope that we're going to hear from you soon, but it literally could be a long time before we ever hear from you again. This could be the last time for a while, right?
Sounds ominous.
I know.
But yeah.
We got to leave on that cliffhanger because we really don't know.
I don't know. It's very last minute booking. I don't know either.
So hopefully we will hear from you next Monday after Raw.
Yeah.
If not, we'll talk to you next year.
Maybe.
This is so ominous.
This is weird. Yeah.
It's very weird. There's nothing you can tell us, though, right? There's nothing definitive?
Yeah, no. And
but you're healthy, right?
I'm healthy, yeah. Okay. It's not health related. I'm not having a baby or anything like that.
Are you going to the World Combat Games?
I'm not going to the World Combat Games. Okay. I just have a lot of personal. I'm just going to take some time away.
The batteries are burnt.
Yeah. I haven't knocked any girls up. I'm not nothing like that.
Oh, wow. What a tie-in to where we might be on Friday.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're going to get on out of here. LiveAudioWrestling.com, iTunes. You can tweet me at IamJohnPollock or at Way0937, and we'll give you an update on Mr. Ting.
And it sounds way too weird. It's weird because
I don't know if we'll hear from you again for a bit.
It's just work-related, that's all.
Okay. Way failed a drug test at work, and we're waiting to hear if he's going to be suspended or not.
Sure, go with that.
All right. Well, if I don't get to say Merry Christmas and a Happy
Thanks.
New Year,
Merry Christmas. If to I don't you get too, to say, well, maybe I will. Maybe you will have to say it all over again.
Perhaps, and maybe this will just sound silly on Monday. We'll find out, folks. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a unique time in history.
Kind of came out of nowhere. This cliffhanger.
I know. All right. Well, Way, if this is your last contribution of 2013, what is the music that can take us out here?
Oh, boy. The music that should go out on this edition of Review Away should be the song of 2013, and that is Shabba Ranks by ASAP Ferg.
Oh, wow. My favorite.
There you go.
All right, we'll chat with you next week, everybody.
Short nigga, but my dick tall. What I told your bitch, dog. Only thug nigga, damn at the pitchfork. Dirty van bitches wanna suck my dick off. Pop a zany for a penny, get the hit floor. Run up in the shit raw. I got a girl, I ain't never got no fucking condoms. If she caught me, then that bitch, I'd be pissed off. Real nigga shit. Berkey be mobbing all day. Probably with Marty RJ. Then my niggas from back in the day. Tarzan ain't showing his face. He probably the one with the cake. Front then he letting it spray. Two shots to a bomber clad man. Shabba Ranks, let it go in your brain. Front then he coming your way. Let the semi dump dump, then he coming your way. Duck when the bad man come. My youth don't rock with me. Coop full of bad hoes. They all wanna come with me.
You got a coupe with a sad hoe, cause she wanna come with me. Shabba, shabba, shabba ranks, shabba, shabba ranks. Eight gold rings like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Four gold chains like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. One gold tooth like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Shabba, shabba ranks, shabba, shabba, shabba ranks. Eight gold rings like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Two bad bitches like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. One gold tooth like I'm shabba, shabba ranks.
Skinny nigga but my dick long. Puss me, my dick so. Probably bumping R. Kelly, sipping Crystal. So you know the whole world getting pissed on. I don't really give a fuck if you pissed off. I just bought a Mega Lemon from the thrift store. Traded for my gold chain and my pistol. Shoot a rocket, make a motherfucker lift off. Block will be mobbing all day. When niggas that shopping, they gay. They chopping them choppers to handle my problems. Cause niggas be plotting these days. But that Rory kinda fast though. She told me pump my brakes. You stuck with a fat hoe. And she wanna stuff her face. To all of my Dominican girls, them. All of my Caribbean girls, them. All my West Indian girls, them. I done fucked a million girls, them. With a little ting-a-ling-a-ling. School bell a ring. Hit her with my ding-a-ling-a-ling. Maybe run a train. Tell her that my niggas wanna bang. In a little brain. And she wanna hang with the gang. With a nigga name.
Shabba. Shabba, shabba ranks. Shabba, shabba ranks. Eight gold rings. Like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Chains like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. One gold tooth like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Shabba, shabba ranks. Shabba, shabba, shabba ranks. Eight gold rings like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. Two bad bitches like I'm shabba, shabba ranks. One gold tooth like I'm shabba, shabba ranks.
I was broke last week, but today be a new day. Motherfuckers like cavities. Cause the nigga be too fake. Walking this bitch with the new Wayne. Looking like Luke Kane.